Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. Listen on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Now available free for both iPhone and Android devices.
George Magnus of UBS, truly with decades of perspective on this most interesting European experiment. Mr. Magnus, good morning.
Good morning to you, Tom.
I'm just fascinated by your thoughts here. Do the elites have any case at all, or are we going to continue to revisit voters saying, just say no?
Well, I think that the elite is under a huge amount of pressure. I mean, you know, we care about it in smaller countries in Europe, but in Italy, it sends out a particular resonant message. I mean, more than half the voters, I don't think we know exactly, it's maybe somewhere between 55 and 58% of the voters, effectively said, you know, we, to hell with your austerity, you know, we've had enough. And you know, it's clearly not an uncommon sentiment amongst European citizens. And although, you know, some of the kind of worst kind of violence that we saw in some demonstrations in the streets last year and subsequently early this year haven't really, you know, haven't really deteriorated to the point where, you know, there's sort of fundamental political instability. I mean, there's instability of a very, very different and nonetheless meaningful kind, which is the challenge to this idea that we can basically cut our way to prosperity. And I think that people have said this is just not working.
Right.
And clearly it isn't.
And the headline here, just, Mike, I've just seen this red sticky from the Bloomberg from yesterday. Japan's 10-year yield falls to 0.68%, the lowest in a decade. In all the carnage yesterday, I missed that. And it really shows how unusual these times are.
And unusual indeed. I want to pose to George the same question we posed to David and we've been talking about all morning. The Italian results, are they Italian specific, or are they going to have spillover effects, bring the Europe crisis back in the same way it seems to come back at this time of year every year?
Well, the first part, Italian politics, have never been particularly simple, particularly not in the last kind of 10 or 15 years. This now is, it is partly Italian because it's a very complicated voting system they have and the way in which seats in the lower and upper house are allocated, you know, does make for a very, very difficult political complexity. But there's something clearly more than that, you know, which is of wider significance, which is really state of sentiment amongst Italian voters here in this particular
case. George, you look at the unemployment chart for Italy. I sent that out yesterday, folks, on Bloomberg Radio Plus. That's transferable over to other nations. Does France, for instance, have a Beppe Grillo?
Well, they have a what they call the Front National or National Front, which is their kind of right wing political right kind of party, which is very nationalistic, very skeptical on the euro system. They didn't really, score any, they didn't really threaten the election of President Hollande last year, although they have made kind of some electoral gains in the lower house of the French Parliament, the French Assembly. So there is that latent, less obvious and perhaps less immediately threatening phenomenon in France. But as your reporter indicates, the focus really is on Italy. I mean, we shouldn't forget Spain, by the way. I mean, that's a long, long way from being out of the woods. But clearly the political instability in Italy, we don't really know, whether Mr. Bassani, who will be asked to form a government, will be able to do so, whether he will try to form a grand coalition with Mr. Berlusconi's party, what the position of Beppe Grillo, they got 25.5% of the votes. the possibility of another election within the next 6 months, I think, is pretty high.
George, you're right about a third bull market. Describe that. What were the first and the second bull markets?
Well, these are bull markets in the U.S. dollar that I've just been looking at. The first one took place between around 1978 and 1985. This was, I'm sure everybody remembers, this was the conquest of inflation on Paul Volcker's watch, and it caused a big rise in real interest rates in the United States. Unfortunately, it also brought down the whole of Latin America in the process. The second bull market in the U.S. dollar was between 1992 and 2001. It kind of peaked with a dot-com bubble. And this was a period of when, you know, the U.S. government was eventually running fiscal surpluses. It was good growth, the technology boom, and so on. Unfortunately, this one also had rather unfortunate consequences in that it helped to contribute to the Asian crisis. So what I basically think is that these cycles are rather biblical. They come in kind of 7 to 8 year cycles, bear, bull, bear, bull, bear, bull. We've just been through an 8 year, 9 year bear market in the dollar, and I think it ended in 2008, 2009. And I think this bull market in the U.S. dollar is going to go on for another 2 or 3 years yet.
Does it in the long run matter the exact level, only that the dollar is relatively stronger than the other currencies?
Well, the level will matter to, I mean, you know, obviously very substantial proportions of, you know, S&P earnings come from overseas. So if the dollar rises, what I think could be another kind of 15 to 25%, I don't mean this year, by the way, but certainly by 2014, 2015, if it rises another, say, 20% against the yen and the euro, for example, that's going to have a significant effect on the translation of U.S. Earnings back to the United States.
I agree with that. Well, George, I agree with that. I think it's profound. Is this a desirable outcome?
No, not really. Actually, the consequences of a strong dollar actually are somewhat disturbing, actually, because they do suggest instability in economic conditions in other countries. So it tells us something about what the Japanese may be going through, and we know that in part they're deliberately trying to devalue the yen. It certainly may tell us something about the state of Europe, which I think we've just had another sharp reminder of with the Italian elections. And of course, some of the big issues really will be how countries like China and Brazil and India manage their currencies and the kind of the withdrawal of capital, basically, because a strong dollar would be symptomatic of a return of assets from, you know, emerging markets, risk markets in particular, back to the United States and to so-called safe havens, I think.
Well, the reason I asked earlier about the value is I was just going back this past week looking for when the United States first adopted its strong dollar policy. It would be Lloyd Benson back, I think, in 1994 before Bob Rubin actually became Treasury Secretary. And at the time, the Japanese yen was hitting 104 and world currency markets were in an uproar because the dollar was too weak. And I'm wondering if we don't make too much of the relative values at various times.
Well, I mean, yes, it's a very good question. And, of course, it's basically part of the wider issue about currency wars that's been kind of simmering away on the back burner, you know, these last few weeks. Nobody really minds, you know, if the dollar is, you know, plus or minus. I mean, I'm not saying that necessarily that the dollar euro or the dollar yen or dollar pound are at absolutely fair value today, but there aren't huge variations in terms of value. But of course, if you move beyond kind of 3, 4, 5 percentage point movements either way of where we are, and you get a kind of a real trend going, then I think the level really does begin to matter. It matters both in terms of, you know, public policy, foreign exchange management policy of countries against one another, and about, you know, what their central banks are doing. But of course, it also matters to inflation in countries that are maybe quite susceptible to it, which would be, in particular, I would say, the emerging countries.
What is the color of George Magnus's financial repression right now? One of the constant themes, George, of your writing and what Mike and I do every day is this idea of savers are just getting killed, whether it's Italy or the United Kingdom. There's literally an artificial construct for anybody conservative, isn't there?
Yeah, unfortunately, I mean, this is not. I mean, it's new for this generation, but I mean, financial repression is not new for, you know, those who have kind of read through, you know, what happens in financial crises, and this is precisely what we should have expected, which is that, you know, there would be, and there still are, obviously, very profound attempts to keep interest rates, particularly to depositors and to households, extremely low, and not least of which because, we need those kind of exceptionally easy monetary conditions to try to lift our economies out of the kind of little depression, and obviously because governments and central banks need willing audiences mm-hmm. or universes to sell their bonds to. But I think there are certainly circumstances, and of course you'll know about this better in the United States than anywhere else, that this debate is beginning to change. So I'm not predicting that American interest rates are about to start flying up, but I think right. that. You know, the Federal Reserve is clearly closer to an exit door from quantitative easing than any other major central bank.
George Magnus, thank you so much, particularly on this day after what we saw in Italy.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013, Bloomberg LP.